Backseat Producers, episode number 275, Cloud Atlas.
Good news is that it's probably going to be in theaters for another week or two.
Okay. Yeah, there seems to be a lot of hate back and forth, a lot of hate and love back and forth from what I'm trying to ignore in the press.
Yes.
You either love it or you hate it. It's either one of the two. So.
It was a movie. Hmm. That was a total encapsulation of my thoughts on the movie at this time.
Okay, well, I will try to see it in the next week or so.
We're doing it next Wednesday.
Hmm?
We're doing it next Wednesday.
Oh, next Wednesday?
Yep.
Okay.
And then the week after that, we're doing Winter's Bone.
Okay.
Give Jennifer Lawrence the Winter's Bone.
And I saw Upstream Color today.
I don't know what that means.
I assume it's racist. It's the second movie by the guy who made Primer.
Okay. Ooh.
And it is... I'm going to need to watch it about 18 more times to figure out just what the fuck I saw.
Okay. Some of the name of that because I've already forgotten.
Yeah. It is available on Netflix now.
Okay.
It's great. Streaming.
Great.
It's, I like that. It's as obtuse as Primer is.
You're obtuse. You have to really pay attention to it.
Even that probably won't help. There is
kind of like this
there movie. Is zero exposition.
Okay.
I mean,
you have to figure it out from
there's
watching.
No exposition at all. Like none. Like there are parts where it was like, I just want a scene where some guy is smoking a cigarette in a room just reading his love you, okay?
Something's maybe reading, giving me names.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hi, baby.
Good night, bud. Yeah, just smoking a cigarette. All right.
So here's what's going on.
So here's what you haven't fucking figured out yet.
Yeah.
You idiot. Because that's... I got about 3/4 of the way through this movie and was like, I still don't know what's going on. I am wrapped. Just my attention is just all in. And I'm like, I've got to watch this movie at least one or two more times. I think I understand parts of... I mean, I understand some of the things that are happening. I don't understand motives. Like, the motives are lost on me. Thank you, buddy. This was on my door Sunday morning. So as you can see there,
you can see that
shield scattered about.
Okay.
That was holding it for me for Father's Day.
I'll tell you, someone really likes Superman.
Yes. It's better than I did. All I did was text my dad. And then he's like, you want to come over for barbecue? No. Sit on my couch and do nothing.
Cow.
Cal-El, okay.
Yeah.
Horns.
I'm sorry, that was our dog.
Oh.
Cal-El.
Okay.
That's why
his feet, too.
No, dog feet.
Dog feet, okay.
I tried to make him look as much
as we were just about ready to start recording, so you need to go.
Sorry.
See?
Oopsies.
I'm recording. Good night. That's annoying.
You don't need a sound check anymore.
Oh, dude.
That's worse.
That is you went off the chart.
Yeah, do that again and you're losing television for another week.
Mm.
Good night.
Good night. I'm still at it.
Yeah, he lost TV for a week. It's Sunday night and Julie hadn't talked to her dad yet, so she's on the phone with him wishing him happy Father's Day, and he starts doing the family gossip thing. And we let Holden and Aaron watch some TV while Julie's on the phone. I'm goofing around the computer. Suddenly he turns around and goes, shh. What? What did you just do? He was trying to tell Julie to shush because she was being too loud on the phone. So he lost TV for a week. Whoops.
What did you learn?
Because
you'll have a week to reflect on it.
Yeah, it's... It's funny because he loses TV, so all of a sudden the Nook comes back out. Hey, I just finished dinner. And normally during the week it's dinner and then ass on the couch watching TV or something. Just finished dinner. Can I go see if Tommy's available? Go. Friend down the street. Oh, okay. He just wanted to. He wanted to
do anything.
Do anything because he can't watch TV. So It's all of a sudden he's willing to go outside and play with his friends and do all this other stuff.
Get it out of your system now. It's still nice and not unbearably hot.
Yeah,
because it's going to get worse. I'm sure is coming.
It's going to get a lot worse.
Yeah, I hope not until after this weekend.
Oh, is this all outdoor?
I hope not.
So what are you dressed as?
I told Lena I was going to go. Are you Naked Mal from Garbage?
Nice. Either that or Inara.
She said I couldn't do Inara because she didn't want me to upstage Jen. I'm like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. We're going to a Firefly-themed wedding. I think it was Jen, and I got a jean shirt. As minimal costume as possible. If the costume's not going to be funny, I don't want to wear it.
Yeah.
I've got the wool hat, but I don't know.
You need to either go as Inara or Kaylee or River. Clearly, would be best is you go as Zoe and have Melina go as Wash.
Oh, blackface! I could go as Mr. Universe's sex doll.
Oh yeah, yeah, that would be awesome. It would be.
I'll just stick a fleshlight through the front of the pants. That's perfect. God damn, why didn't I think of that before?
You got time. You got 2 days.
Plenty of time.
Who is the singing?
She can't stop singing.
That's right.
All right.
We're ready. I just have a life-size chess set up there, wherever this place is.
Well, the
Herman.
Yeah. That place, it wasn't life-size. There was that oversized chess set at the lake.
Yes.
But that's not life-size.
It's probably not life-size. It's probably just big.
Are we ready?
Are you ready?
Man, I was born ready.
Hey, this is Tony.
This is Daryl.
This is David.
We're the Backseat Producers.
And this is Man of Steel.
No.
No.
Not yet.
No, no.
Not yet.
My penis is crying sad tears.
I think are those tears?
Is it tears? Is it syphilis? Who's to say?
It could go either way. Next week, we are talking about Man of Steel.
Like a bisexual.
I don't know where that was from.
From Family Guy. You go either way. Like a bisexual.
Gotcha. I don't watch Family Guy, so.
I watch a considerable amount of Family Guy.
The week after that, we're talking about, I already forgot, Winter's Bone.
Yeah.
And I watched Upstream Color, and we might talk about that at some point. If we have time to watch it.
If we have time
to
watch
it. It's actually not a long movie,
Tony,
I need repeat viewings on
this one.
Are
we going to die soon?
Maybe.
What is that noise?
I don't know.
It's water dripping.
It's water. I think we got water and
it sounds like a fountain.
Yeah, one of the children got water out of the door, so it.
Okay.
It's not a good scene. Anyway, I'll just cut that out.
Or don't.
Or
home
not.
Improvement at the Mast House.
New washer dryer this weekend.
Whoa! Father's Day, 2 weekends in a row?
Yeah, no kidding. So,
Melina bought a new office desk for herself. That's for me.
And how did that go?
Awful. Because we had to put it together. And then she pulled it out of the box, and there were 25 pages of stuff to do. And she's like, this is impossible. We cannot do this. Call your dad. I'm not calling my dad to put together every piece of furniture. I call him for every plumbing problem we have. 5 minutes in, we don't even make an attempt. So 8.5 hours later, that bad boy was put together.
Nice. Very nice.
Sense of accomplishment there.
It was. So she's like, that was so hard. All right. I don't do a lot of furniture construction, but I know that there are hard things and then there are easy things. And the easy things contain bits that go together, like those little, the circular screw things.
Oh, yeah.
That the little pointy things go in, so it doesn't have to be perpendicular. It can be a little off, but you're still just screwing it in. That's easy mode, because you don't have to get it. It just has to be close for it to work. It was all that. She's like, oh, that was so hard.
No,
because I'm pretty sure we did two of these things wrong, and it's still put together.
Key question, how many pieces did you have left over at the end?
Zero.
You did it wrong then.
I know. Because
they always give you extras.
I know.
That's a problem.
Even the Allen wrench was gone.
That's going to be the next cat
surgery. Somewhere, yeah.
It's going to be the next cat surgery.
Yeah. I want to run from an anus.
Oh.
How'd that get in there?
The thing with that black cat, though, like, she's short-haired, and her fur is black, so you see her skin, and it's just nothing but anus on that cat. Like, it can't be bigger than an inch, like, half an inch in diameter, but the thing just looks so monstrous. It's just right in your face. What are you doing? Come on. Cover your butt. You can see what you had for lunch.
Come over. Or brush over the cat.
So, we really want to talk about Cloud Atlas, considering we're talking about your cat's ass. Delete it off.
To be fair, I loved Cloud Atlas.
That's your high-level thoughts?
Yeah.
All right.
It's complicated to review this movie because it's like 10 different movies.
Yes, it is. Daryl, what'd you think?
This movie is hard to get into, but once you're into it, it kind of takes you away.
It was a movie.
Tony's balls.
I don't know. There were parts of it that were really good and parts of it that were like over-the-top cheesy. And I had a hard time rectifying some of that. Like, there were certain stories that I really enjoyed and wanted more of because I was really enjoying them. Then there were other stories that I wanted more of because I couldn't figure out
why
the characters were doing the things that they were doing because it made no sense to me. We can get into that.
One character did mention that, you know, we all keep making the same mistakes over and over and over again.
Yeah, we've all seen Battlestar Galactica.
Mm-hmm.
This has all happened before, it will all happen again.
But God didn't do it in this one.
No.
In this one, goddamn Hugo Weaving did it.
Hugo Weaving
was awesome in every timeline he was in.
Yeah.
Especially when he was the nurse.
Yes.
When he was the nurse, it was the best.
Yeah, when he was Nurse Ratchet, he was awesome. Because that's exactly awesome. Who he was.
I know, it was so awesome. Ugh.
All right, so do we want to even try to explain what this is about?
Not really. It's just a bunch of vignettes that are loosely connected by thematic and element stuff. They're just loosely connected.
Yeah.
And the actors all play
multiple roles.
Yeah, the four principal actors all play a role in each of the vignettes' different timelines.
Yeah, one thing is, though, in this movie is you do have to kind of pay attention because the editing can get kind of fast at points where they're jumping from one timeline to the other, trying to maintain the continuity in the storyline. And the actors do a wonderful job of maintaining that continuity throughout their little their timeline. But to tell you the truth, it gets tiresome after a while. Actually, that first hour is kind of the hardest part to get through. Once the pace of the story starts picking up, they get a lot more interesting, especially as the edits jump back and forth faster and faster.
As soon as more Jim Broadbent gets on the screen, it gets a lot better.
Yeah.
His storyline was the second best, only to the two gay guys, to the composer.
That
was the best story.
Didn't understand why he was killing himself.
I don't understand that either.
I didn't understand it to a point of hating that storyline because it made no sense. I never bought that he would kill himself.
I never bought that either. But.
But he obviously did, They projected it from the beginning.
Yeah, like they start off that way.
Yeah.
That's the first thing that happens to that guy. Which, I guess I'm all right with. The weakest justification I can accept is, this work is so important, I can't let old crotchety composer destroy it by ruining my reputation. So I'm going to kill myself to generate interest about it, because it must be heard. That is the weakest justification I can come up with for it.
But it's probably, I mean, that's probably the motivation of the character.
None of that's ever said.
No. No.
It's all just conjecture on my part.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the IMDb page. There are 15 actors listed on the first page.
Yeah.
Every one of them plays multiple roles.
Yeah, sometimes they're just a little more than cameos, but they're all there.
Yeah. And they have at least three roles. Each of these people has at least three roles in here. Some of them a lot more.
The weird thing was, too, is sometimes they're playing against their character type, too.
Or gender.
Or gender, yes. There's a lot of gender swapping going on here.
Tom Hanks doesn't gender swap.
No, he does not. He's one of the few that doesn't.
Yeah. He becomes a grizzled, one-eyed man. Hugh Grant does.
Yeah. Hugh Grant does. I did not realize until the end when they were, because they show you all the carrier, that he was one of the, like, the savages in the future. That was good.
Yeah.
Because I did not see that one at all.
I must say, technically, this movie is really brilliant. Story-wise, a little on the weak side. Actors are top-notch. It's just that...
I don't think the story was weak.
Well, it's not weak, but it's hard for the average person to follow. You really have to pay attention to it.
I think you just have to pay attention.
That's the problem is. This movie requires you to pay attention. Most movies, you just turn off your brain and just go for the ride.
I think the problem I had with the movie is it felt like the kind of movie that you watch it, and if you haven't read the book, you feel like you're missing something.
Yeah, you're missing a lot of the backstory.
I don't know that the book has any more insight than the movie did.
I started reading the book, and it was terrible, so I stopped. That's the insight I can give you on the book.
Yeah.
It's not good.
There are some movies where they're made out to be that the characters are so iconic that you should understand who they are, and I think comic books can be guilty of this sometimes, where characters do and say things that don't really make any sense, but if you say that to a comic book reader, they're like, oh, no. That makes perfect sense. You just don't get it because you don't read the comic books. That's exactly what that character would do. And
something else this weekend too, Tony. Come on.
I'm not going there.
That happened in Serenity.
I think you're right. I'm a little farther. Oh yeah, yeah. Well, because of the comic, and if you hadn't watched the TV show, you didn't get you didn't understand why certain things. Why certain relationships were important and how they work together.
Well, the
they explained a lot of it. They did a fair job with the movie, but you didn't get the full depth of understanding all the relationships and why certain people could and couldn't be trusted and things like that.
So, what I liked about this movie, other than it being vignettes, which I always dig, I like vignettes because it's usually, it dumps out a lot of the nonsense. Like, you really get down to the story, and there's not a whole bunch of floating around set dressing. Not that there wasn't plenty of that in this movie. The movie was goddamn 3 hours long.
No, it was a long movie.
I was going to say, that first hour is the toughest to get through, but once you're through it, it moves.
I kind of feel like the last is the hardest to get through. Like, there's an obvious point to the movie where it climaxes, and then it goes on for another 45 minutes.
Well, wrapping up all the storylines, it's trying to...
Certain storylines climax early.
I heard that about you, yeah. Hey, was it or was it not creepy as shit when, like, 200-year-old Halle Berry was putting the flirty moves on 200-year-old Tommy?
They made me on the bones.
Ah! Gross! Ah. You look like Crypt Keeper.
I thought it was rather sweet, to tell you the truth.
I think I need to watch it again to appreciate some of the stuff they did. Because there was some foreshadowing that was like super subtle.
Soylent Green is people!
Yes, that was the one that really stood out to me because he was just being a jackass. Mm-hmm. But it totally foreshadowed a completely different storyline.
That storyline was great.
Yes. That was one of the ones that I was really into. Mm-hmm. Like
I wasn't into
the Sanmi
at all when it started.
When it started, it was just weird. And it's like, oh, this is just a weird Japanese thing. And then it's like, oh no, there's a lot more to this.
What else is going on here?
Yeah, the Sanmi story I liked. What storylines did you like the best?
I liked the composer, that guy who actually writes the Cloud Atlas, and Jim Broadbent's. Like the retirement home escape. There was a point in the bar when they get there and the dude asks all the Scottish people for help. There's a woman in the bar that looks just like Sarah Horton.
I need to go back and watch it now.
She looks surly and drunk and pissed. And it is awesome.
It probably is Sarah.
Yeah, it probably is Sarah. Those were my two favorites. I dug every other one. But I could have done without the slave dude on the ship. Like, that one to me was mostly useless.
Well, that's one of the kind of the major themes of this whole movie is enslavement and freedom, and the ultimate end of all racism.
Hmm. You say that because Hugo Weaving looked weird as an Asian?
Well, not only that, but it's kind of the one a common thread that runs through all the vignettes is losing one's freedom and gaining it back, recognizing what racism and slavery comes to an ultimate end to.
Really? Because I always saw it more as a coming to understand what liberation actually means. Mm-hmm. Because in a lot of cases, these people have their freedom, but even at one point they say, people who have their freedom don't understand what it's
until
like
they lose
not
it.
To have it.
Right. Losing it in the most subtle way, like being confined to a nursing home.
And so almost everybody in the end of their vignettes makes a choice that isn't necessarily good for them, but it's a choice that they own.
Well, I don't say that it's always good for them. Some of them do make a good choice. Right. Others make a very hard choice that has a bad end for them, but ultimately has a better end for everybody else.
And I'm trying to remember the conclusion of every storyline, but they all seem to advance the cause of being free.
Yeah.
Like, every storyline, in its ultimate resolution, just advances the idea of being free. Some far more literally than others, when the guy comes back with and sees Tilda and tells his father-in-law to screw off.
Hugo Weaving.
Yeah,
Hugo Weaving. He's always the bad guy.
But he's going to become an abolitionist.
Yeah, and he's going to run off and be an abolitionist, and we're going to fight against slavery. And, I mean, it's very literal.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess the suicide was freeing himself from
society's conventions.
Yeah, the conventions.
Or the responsibilities of the blackmail of one person.
Yeah, I guess.
No, that whole storyline is very, very, very complicated. You're right. It has a whole lot of weird aspects to it.
There is a lot going on in that one storyline.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Between...
With White Halle Berry.
Yeah.
That's weird. White Halle Berry married to old Jim Broadbent. Like, he is monstrously old. Hugo Weaving's a Nazi? No. Hugo Weaving's a Jew. She's a Nazi.
Mm-hmm.
It's backwards. So, White Nazi Halle Berry. I like that one. I still like it. He ends it on his terms.
Yeah.
Which I appreciate.
Yeah.
Because there is, I guess, no other expression, no stronger expression of your freedom than killing yourself.
Yeah, it just was weird to me. And moving on from that, I liked every character that Hugo Weaving was.
Every character Hugo
Weaving. Everyone.
Was great.
Old Georgie was probably the first one that really just grabbed
Now, that me. Was the one character I did not understand. Why was he there? Was he a figment of Tom Hanks or Zachary's imagination? Was he kind of a malevolent spirit out of that just arose out of that land? Or what? No real explanation on where he came from.
Well...
Or was it a manifestation of his guilt? I don't know.
I don't think it was a manifestation. So, with Tom Hanks' character, pretty consistently through this, he follows a path of, in every existence, he becomes a better person. And so finally, in the
end... He's a weak person who becomes strong.
Right.
Yeah.
And so in the end, old Georgie is that last vestiges of his weakness. Like, the really literal temptation in all of these bad scenarios that even in the last vignette, he gives in to him in the beginning and then resists him and finally...
Banishes him.
Yeah.
I mean... And depending on how you look at it, I mean, you can read a lot into it. Arguably, these people had radiation sickness. I mean, if you really look at that story, they all had radiation sickness. That could have simply been hallucinations. That at the end, when she took him away from it and they went to another world and they were safe,
he
just got better. And because we never saw when he was that old man. Old Georgie was never there.
Mm-hmm.
He had not.
Well, it
shown
could have
up
been summarized that he also left behind all his demons.
Right. I mean, there's a dozen ways you could look at that particular character, and
they also imply that far future was the far past.
In what way?
That's the only timeline with cannibals on that beach, and in the first scene of the movie, Tom Hanks in the 1862. Whatever is digging cannibal teeth out of the beach.
Oh,
yeah.
It's actually said 1848, so.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so they imply that
it's cyclical.
Yeah, they do this. They do that cyclical thing a lot, where hey, you seem really familiar to me.
Yes, yeah, because the last vignette's timeline is just 106 years after the fall. We never say when the fall was, mm-hmm. although in the book it's alluded to being in the far future.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure it's in the far
future. But we don't know when. The movie does not allude that it's when the fall has occurred.
I bet it's after 2012.
No doubt. After the Oscars, yeah, that's when their fall was.
That's supposed to be post-apocalyptic Hawaii.
I dig that. I dig that because of the 70s timeline.
Well, that's also, yeah. When you look at it, that's when they were walking in there seeing all the bodies. That was the bodies from the fight was in.
Mm-hmm. That wasn't my favorite direct tie between two timelines. My mm-hmm. favorite direct tie was the movie they watch of the novelization of Jim Brockman's vignette.
Yeah.
That was my favorite. I will not be subjected to criminal abuse.
Yes, and they all key off on that.
It's so good. It's so good. The Soviet timeline was good. I liked it.
I liked that one.
I was not into it at the beginning. I was like, Japanese are weird.
It was weird, and I got more into the far future / far past timeline the more it went.
Mm-hmm.
I was engaged with Tom Hanks' character through, like, even from the beginning. When he, like, lets that guy and that kid die, and then he just sits there. And he just waits. I was like, I was in for that, because it's like, this guy is messed up. He's weak.
Stone cold mother.
Yeah, he's weak. He's kind of pathetic. Where's this going to go? And so it was interesting to watch that character.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't understand that character, but at least it was interesting to watch him.
Yeah, I accidentally turned on the subtitles before the movie started.
Aww.
And I was like, oh, I'm just going to leave these on now that he's talking, because it's like, I can understand a whole lot better what he's saying. It actually makes sense.
Tom Hanks was still better at the gangs, though. The critic at the window, she was great.
That was awesome. That was really good.
Every writer had cheered on that scene.
I want to tell you that I felt sorry, but those emotions passed pretty quickly.
I did not realize Hugh Grant was Denholm Cavendish, brother. I did not realize that. I only realized that now that I'm looking at it.
He looked like, God damn it, like Mick Jagger. Old, crusty Mick Jagger.
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to talk about, unless we talk about real specific timelines and their arcs, but that's six of them?
Six separate arcs.
I don't feel like getting that detailed and walking through all of that.
You know, we haven't talked about the 70s timeline at all.
Mm-hmm.
The 70s timeline was okay.
It was all right.
Well, the only problem with the 70s timeline is there doesn't seem to be any overall purpose into it You have the professor who was the lover of the composer, or excuse me, the physicist who was the lover of the composer, dies in there, and the girl who is supposedly his reincarnated soul is the person he's talking to.
Whoa. What?
Okay.
She's not the reincarnation.
Yes, she is, because she has the comet mark on her.
The comet mark is just the main character each vignette.
Yes, but that's the thing. Yes, the composer who committed suicide eventually becomes the reporter, and he's talking to her directly. That's kind of the only tie in there, but there really wasn't anything I think that arc was kind of weak, because the only thing that it really came out of that storyline, it was doing the right thing. It was following that lead down to get that...
I think the implication with that storyline was that whatever they were doing with the plant, whatever the company was doing with the nuclear plant, was ultimately the cause of the problem in Neo Seoul.
No. Because of the hydro reactor project was exposed in the newspapers as being defective.
Right.
But it wasn't the cause for the rise of the union of Neo Seoul.
No, I was talking more about the rise of the water.
Well, the rise of water, that could be attributed to global warming. Yeah. That means that's just something that happened. We don't really know much about the Union other than the fact it's a pretty totalitarian state.
Asia. That's what I got.
But is that just confined to Korea, or is that pretty much the whole world?
I assume Neo Seoul is on top of normal Seoul.
Well, they said that. Because, they did say that.
Because old Seoul is underwater.
Yeah. Yeah, they flat out said that at one point.
So that's a heck of an ocean rise if you're having a city that's something like 100 miles inland is being submerged.
But you don't worry with it. Water's water, yo. I got nothing on that. I don't know. They
dropped so many tantalizing hints of what that was about, but they really didn't go into any big detail on it. You just kind of have to assume that it's what's there is what's there.
That's a weird storyline in general, because she gets thrown into the water, and she comes back to her apartment, so she sends her kid in, or she sends that neighbor kid in to see if that apartment's safe. What if that dude was there to shoot her? That kid dies.
Yeah.
Now what? Like, what's the move there? Why are you going back to your house?
Well, where else are you going to go if you've had to swim through the ocean?
Probably not back to my house if they're just trying to kill me.
Well, it'd be probably the last place anybody thinks you'd go back to, so why not go back there?
That's probably the last place I would go. I would agree with the people who would think that would be the last place I would go, even if they were trying to kill me.
Especially if he knocked her off the bridge, he probably thought she was dead, so he wouldn't have any reason to go back there and make sure she staggers up out of the ocean soaking wet.
Melina is obsessed with this dude, Cade Courtley. He's like an ex-Navy SEAL, and he used to have this show on Discovery or one of those stations called Surviving Disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And so, like, it was just a bunch of crazy scenarios. Surviving Disaster. Home invasion. So they do a scenario, and they have, like fake people coming in, and it's an all dramatic thing. And he's just, like, there is this disembodied person, and he's like, okay, when they come in and take you in your home, here's what you have to do. And then there's like shopping mall shooting, and he's like, okay, when they're shooting in the mall, here's what you do. Don't run along the wall. Run about a foot away from it, because when a bullet strikes the wall, it bounces off and then rides perpendicular to it about 6 inches. What?
Apparently didn't know.
So one of them is...
Wow. You can just remember all that when it's all going down.
One of them is, if you are in a trapped car that's sinking in the water, you either need to punch the window out or roll it down before you hit the water, or wait until it's completely submerged and then get out.
Yeah.
But then the windshield cracked, and I was like, that's not how that works. That's not how windshields work.
Well, also, they made the one mistake. That particular model of Volkswagen is noted for floating. In fact, VW had several commercials where they actually showed it floating. It does not sink.
Wow.
Because the unibody construction was so tight. Well, maybe it will float.
Maybe that report
for several
was heavy.
Hours.
Wow.
She had a big meal.
Yeah.
She
had a big meal. Yeah.
Trunk was loaded up.
Yeah.
With all those stolen reports.
Yeah. On a side note, one of Kate Courtley's most interesting surviving disasters was what to do if your plane is hijacked. And so he gave probably the best advice I've ever seen in just about general close hand-to-hand combat. He's like, okay, here's the thing. It's going to be an even toss that you can win the fight. But if you can't walk away from the fight, you lost the fight even if you win. So you need to pad yourself up, and you need to make sure that you take as little damage as possible. That's your goal. Not win. Take as little damage as possible.
Make the other guy suffer.
That's really good advice.
The first advice of self-defense class when I took a self-defense class, it was like pre-karate, because I did a little bit of martial arts for exercise. If you can avoid the fight, do that.
You've already won.
Yeah. Your second option is try to kick them in the knee. And when they go down...
Kick the shit out of them.
No. Just
away.
Run. Just get away.
Move away.
Because you don't know if they've got a weapon of any type. And even if it's a gun, it's a whole lot harder to shoot from laying down when your knee is bent the wrong way than... from standing.
Yeah, it's really hard to hit a target. It's harder to hit a target that's 10 feet away than a target that's 2 feet away.
Yeah.
A lot harder.
So part of an IO9 story has a snippet that explains every storyline.
What?
All six of them. Number one, in 1850, Adam Ewing visits a Pacific island, then sails home to San Francisco, coping along the way with an escaped slave and a deadly tropical brain parasite that his friend Henry is trying to cure him of. I think friend is loose.
Parasite is loose.
Yes, well, we never know who has it. He just keeps poisoning him.
Yeah.
Does he have it?
No. I got the idea, though. Here. He probably suffered from a heat stroke.
Yeah.
And then the other guy convinced him he had the parasite. And he just kept poisoning him.
Yeah, it's really hot out here.
Yeah, that's because it's really hot out here.
Yeah, and you're wearing sick. A black coat and a hat.
Yeah.
Number two, in the 1930s, a young musician named Robert Frobisher goes to work for a famous composer and his...
white Nazi.
Amanuensis.
As an amanuensis.
Yeah. In 1974, a Cub reporter named Louisa Ray gets drawn into a murder mystery and an apparent cover-up at a local nuclear power plant. Number four, in 2012, an elderly publisher has a stroke of good fortune that quickly turns nasty, and he's forced to go on the run. Number five, in a dystopian near future, a cloned fabricant works as a waitress in a nightmarish diner, only to start thinking for herself. Number six, in the post-apocalyptic far future, a primitive islander tries to decide whether to help a woman from a super-advanced society to reach a forbidden mountain. Those are vague.
Well, almost some are incorrect, too, so...
Well, some of them are correct at the beginning of the stories, mm-hmm. until you really understand what's going on. It's enough that...
To pique your interest.
Yeah, if you tell somebody who hasn't seen the movie that those are the six storylines, you're not wrong. You're just not giving them all the information.
Yeah, you're not spoiling anything.
Right.
All in all, not a bad movie in itself. If you can sit down and go through it.
Tom Hanks was creepy.
It does have a good payoff at the end if you can work your way through it.
It's a long movie, and this is the kind of movie that I would recommend not watching at different times.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to watch it, block off 3 hours and watch the movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, we watched it over a period of time.
It's tough. It's tough because you lose track of what's going on.
Well, we saw it in theater first.
Oh, well. So we'd seen it. That's better.
We rewatched it yesterday. It took us like 4.5 hours to get through it because it stopped and our cat was crying at the window of another cat. It was just.
It's rough watching it like that just because there's so much going on and the edits are so quick that you're like, what was going on?
What?
In which timeline?
Where are we? Is that Asian chick naked? She's yes. Like mostly naked, but not naked. What's going on?
Anything else?
I swear to God.
Duna Bay is a hottie.
I don't know who that is. Oh, it's the Asian chick.
Mm. Yeah.
I told Melina that one of the Wachowski brothers is now the Wachowski sister.
Yes.
And she did not believe me.
Lana. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's been known for what?
Lana.
Years.
Lana.
Lana.
Yeah.
Lana.
Got the sex change operation after the Matrix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's been, like, that's old news. So, interesting that the Wachowski team, tag-teaming back and forth with actors and sets and everything, was able to pull this off. I say, this movie is technically brilliant.
Yeah, it's the technical aspects of this movie are fantastic. Like, the costuming and the prosthetics were great.
Yes.
And maintaining your,
they really
your
were.
Continuity, yes.
Because there were a few people that I was like... I think I know who that is, but I'm not really sure. I really like the look of the people in the near future. How they physically change their faces. I thought that was clever. And in some of the things that I've seen recently, there was some articles about how the human face is going to evolve. And some of it was pretty close to some of the stuff they did there. Like the eyes are going to get bigger and farther set apart, the foreheads are going to get bigger.
Man, we're going to be ugly.
Yeah. But the future people are going to look at pictures of us and go, like, yeah, they got squished faces. What is wrong with those little rat face people?
In the 70s now. Like, oh, why are you wearing those shorts?
Oh, yeah.
Like, really short shorts. It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, centimeters. I can see your scrotum.
Nair for short shorts.
What is going on? Was it hotter then?
Global warming, no.
Yeah. Global warming is just getting started.
Why do I have to see your balls almost?
It's a 70s thing. You wouldn't understand.
I guess not. You get a, like, the 70s. I just assume in the 70s, everybody was having sex with everybody and everything. So like, you just had to keep the equipment on deck.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was a bat. Yeah, like it was a bat or warming up. Yeah. Like
ready for action.
Any moment. Sometimes at the stoplight, everybody get out and have sex with each other before the red turned to green. 70s were an awesome time in my mind.
So
that's where we get a lot of diseases.
There were no diseases.
In my mind, that's where we get them all. That's where they all came from.
Yep.
Makes your butthole look like
there were actually Superman three. Side. There were three directors on this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Tykwer,
Andy Wachowski, and Lana Wachowski.
How do you keep peeping three directors from each other's throats is not a non-trivial task.
Well, the Wachowskis
separate though.
The Wachowskis work together. Mm-hmm. I mean, and they always do. So
bringing a third party into it is a little more complicated.
The whole film was shot with two parallel filming units, so they really didn't have they really didn't have to work together.
Yeah, but the actors really had to do some mental juggling there too, because one day they'd be working with one set. One team and then one storyline, and the next day they're working on another storyline with another team. So,
and this is where the technical brilliance of the movie comes in. It didn't feel like that.
Mm-hmm. No,
I mean the timelines felt really separate, but they didn't feel like unconnected. Like it felt like a smooth.
It felt like a movie that's made of vignettes where that does have a. I would not have known that this was. Shot had multiple had had two different directing units and parallel filming units had I not read that.
Yeah, it's cohesive.
It is.
And it's not jagged like I would expect from two different teams.
This movie is considered an independent film.
Yes, that was
$100 million.
I did not
really make this movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was a huge colossal financial failure.
Yeah, I bet.
It's only grossed back $30 million.
Oh shit.
Louisa Ray's apartment was 451. Mm-hmm. And that was a connection to Somni 451. It's also a connection to Fahrenheit 451.
Playing the connection game in this movie was fun.
Yeah. Like, yeah, there's a lot there.
Picture of her dad is the dude who played the slave.
Mm-hmm.
That was fun. Probably not the slave part.
But just the fact that he was there. And I liked how in the closing credits they showed you
who everybody was.
To find out that Hugh Grant was the head of the cannibals was like, what? And then you go back and look at, like, I just saw a still picture during that IO9 article I was reading from, and it's a still picture of him as the cannibal, and it's like, yeah, that's totally Hugh Grant. Yeah. You could see it. I would have never guessed that watching the movie, though. Mm-hmm. It was nice. It was cool to see that some of those characters that are known for their image...
Mm. Completely not using the image.
Exactly. No. Yeah, and I dig that.
Character type.
It was great.
Yeah. Halle Berry was the doctor that took off her collar.
That was great.
Well, again, all the prosthetics she was wearing with her implanted instrumentation really hides the features quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I also read in the Wikipedia article on this that there was some agitation from some Asian groups that felt that the use of the yellow face on the makeup to Asianize some of the actors was kind of an insult to them, that they didn't use more Asian actors. Which is, that's a real stretch.
That's kind of the point of what they're doing though, to keep using the same actors
over and over. Yeah, you just can't fill them out like
that. It's a tough position because they have
a real Asian actor.
Yeah, they have several.
They have a couple of them.
They have multiple ones.
But there's six main characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the six is actually Asian.
Right. Mm-hmm. And she ends up playing a ginger in one of them.
The freckles were off-putting.
An ugly ginger.
It was so bad.
She ugged up pretty good.
I assume that's what everybody in the 1800s looked like. Just hideous.
Yeah, when I saw her as Tilda, it was like, ooh, why are you with her? You can do better, brother.
Or Death Rich.
Well, that's true.
It's the long game.
They're getting cut off after this move, though.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, no, we're still going to keep slaves. What we're going to work as abolitionists.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's weak. I think that...
Phone's going crazy over there.
I don't know what's going on with that, but I can see why they would not have used more Asian actors for the main cast, because the main cast was already the main
cast. In place.
Yeah, and they had a number of pretty well-known actors mm-hmm. that weren't even the major players.
Mm-hmm.
Like Susan Sarandon was in four different... Mm-hmm. And played a dude in one of them.
That was even more weird.
That was weird. Keith David kept showing up, who... I can never remember his name, but it's like, I know that.
You recognize that voice because he's said this so many voiceovers.
Yeah, he does a lot. I always want to say he's Ernie Hudson, but every time
no, that's not Ernie Hudson. It's because you haven't watched Ghostbusters.
No, it's because every time I look at that guy, all I can think of is ass to ass from Requiem for a Dream.
Oh.
I pull out that double-sided dildo.
Yep.
You know what The Rock is cooking. It's Jennifer Connelly, full frontal.
Mm.
That's true.
Jared Leto, 30 Seconds to Mars.
I got nothing else.
That's what I got.
I'm just
been done. All right. Next week, Man of Steel.
All right.
Get all steeled up here.
The Man of Steel. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. All right.
Well,
you're seeing next time. You're drinking a Category 5 Hurricane.
That's right.
Oh, right.
Of water.
Oh, not anymore. Week.
I'm going to get real drunk this weekend, Tony. It's a bed and breakfast. I'm going to get drunk because I don't have to go anywhere.
Yep.
I'm going to poop on the floor. Just poop on the floor. Just be done with it.
Sex in a bed and breakfast, a loud sex in a bed and breakfast is awesome and embarrassing for everyone. Everyone. Mm-hmm.
Everyone is taking part of this experience. And it is going to be dirty.
It's everybody gets to share.
Grunting, groaning, yelling, apologizing.
Oh, sorry.
And then you let everybody else wonder, what are you apologizing for? What happened?
You always throw in a, what's your name again?
Oh, dear.
I'm not to tell my mom about you. She'd like you.
All right, I got another one.
All right.
Now I'm finished. Oh, boy.